Great, thank you. I'm Greg LaBarge. I'm with Ohio State University Extension. I want to also acknowledge Harold Waters, who is a co-author with us on me. And really, what I'm going to talk about today is a broader scale, not specific project, but broader scale, really educational program information that we're delivering in Ohio based off of 4R nutrient stewardship. And the reason that it has become so critical for us in relationship to nutrient balances and understanding nutrient flows is this is a satellite photo of Lake Erie in 2011 and represents some microcystis biomass that is on that lake. The warmer colors there give you an indication of a higher level of biomass, thicker biomass per se, with the cooler colors there representing where we have less quantification of that. In 2011, really, they came up with a scaling. They thought that 2011 would be the worst microcystin type of infestation or growth that we would see, and came up with a scale of 0 to 10 to move forward in relationship to trying to represent future levels of microcystin growth. Then 2015 happened, and 2015 you can see is a very similar, in fact, maybe in some respects more intensive bloom in some locations. And so the scaling had to change, and now we have quantified the year 2015 as 10.5, so we've expanded the scale. You know, it's a variable problem. Microcystin is certainly international problem in relationship to looking at growth and nutrient enrichment in waters. So, and with us in Ohio, it's not just a Lake Erie problem. This is a representation of other bodies of water that have been sampled in the past year, looking at microcystis concentrations, the toxin that's produced by microcystin. And the red dots there are ones that reach a threshold that start actions as far as either not drinking or not touching the water. So we do have this as a region-wide problem in the state of Ohio and looking at remediation of that. And certainly when you talk about agriculture's contribution, we need to be thinking about nutrients and fertility and how we represent crop production in this, and we know that we can have an impact through nutrient stewardship. In fact, our legislature believes that truly because they passed a couple of laws for us in reminding us that we need to do a better job from an agricultural standpoint. And I want to share a couple of those with you just so you have an idea of what that has turned out to be. We'll talk a little bit about a 4R Nutrient Stewardship Certification Program, which is actually an ag retailer-based type of program as a voluntary third-party audit type of opportunity for them to prove, basically, that they're doing those practices. And then we'll talk a little bit about some of the research and some extension programming that we're doing. First of all, we did have legislation passed. It came into effect in August of 2014, and we began training immediately as far as looking at a fertilizer applicator certification program, which affects both our commercial as well as our private operators who apply nutrients to their own property or for hire. We've trained about 6,800 people in that program since the inception of that, so we're making some progress there. And if you look at the legislation text, it's kind of interesting that 4Rs appears pretty predominant. If you look in that left-hand column, actually the education needed to pertain to the 4Rs as far as nutrient applications, and then some criteria as far as helping us meet our EPA mandated nutrient reduction strategies, as well as considering the economic value of those nutrients and practices and changes that might occur. So with that, we developed a training curriculum that you see there, which is not going to be any different than you're probably doing at your own level, but talking about, first of all, getting farmers to understand the water quality impacts of nutrients is one key thing to that, and then talking about best management practices in relationship to nitrogen and phosphorus, which tend to be that kind of key criteria that we look at trying to represent. This is a survey from some of that initial training, and farmers get it. Farmers understand the relationship between nutrient stewardship. They understand that what they do on the land has impacts in relationship to water quality, and these key questions kind of represent that. I think one of the things in some subsequent surveys that we've been doing is that while they know the impacts of nutrients in a general sense, they probably think that they individually are doing a pretty good job in relationship to how they're managing their nutrients, and it might be somebody else's problem in relationship to their neighbors and so forth. So, some things there that we have as far as educational items. I think a one key thing is with this program, obviously you start to bring in new people, and we did have 20% of the audiences that participated in that training were new to extension programming, so they're hearing some of the things that we have to say maybe for the first time. The second piece of legislation, and this was newly passed after the first of the year, came into effect in July, actually is criteria for when we can or cannot apply nutrients based off of really ground conditions. No frozen snow covered applications. This is with manure and granular fertilizer. Then saturation of the soil becomes important, and then there is a rainfall forecast criteria. For manure, it's with a half an inch within a 24-hour period, and then with fertilizer, it's a 1 inch within 12-hour type of criteria looking at the forecast. So those are two of the legislative things that are underway. Then I want to mention, the 4R Nutrient Stewardship Certification Program is something that came about by this group of folks here. That particular program is for looking at ag retailers and having them go through a third-party audit voluntarily to certify that they're meeting 41 different criteria that relate to nutrient application. Most of it is 4R-related types of things. And there is a cost for the ag retailers to this. They actually do have an annual cost as well as a audit cost that they do. It is an on-site audit for the first 2 years, and then there's a third year that will be a desk audit if they are successful in those previous 2 years. So this program gets the ag retailers saying the same message that we are in relationship to 4R stewardship, and I think that's critical because sometimes that can be basically a fight in message in having the ag retailer saying something different than we are. Skip through and then talk a little bit about some of the things that we're doing in the field that pertain to nutrient stewardship. We are looking at validating the Ohio recommendations. Dr. Steve Coleman is leading that effort and doing that not only on our research branch stations, but also on farm sites. And it is a cooperative effort with our commodity groups that a lot of this work is being conducted and is leading in the future to us making sure that we have the right recommendations for the crops that we're growing. You can see basically by the progression of legislation that has happened already that we've legislated to material related to the application as a 4R overall look, and then we've also started to put in place criteria for a application timing based off of ground conditions. You could see where legislation in the future may start to talk about rate, and so having this in place I think is pretty critical. Manure nutrients are certainly an important part of this watershed. It's probably about 20% of the nutrients applied. And we have a person, Glenn Arnold, who's a similar role that I am in, is working directly with that. And what he's doing is really a pre-crop or in-crop application to our grass crops of manure, better utilizing those manure nutrients, particularly the nitrogen quantity to meet crop needs. So certainly an important part of 4Rs is timing and source. The other thing that we're looking at, and many of you who do a lot of work in water quality may know Libby Dayton and Kevin King. They are two researchers that are working on edge of field and then also revision of our phosphorus index. They have sites that are located in these locations, which primarily are in the western Lake Erie Basin, which feeds that Lake Erie area that we were looking at earlier in the graphic. These are our side-by-side fields type of setups with both surface as well as ground or tile water being sampled and looking at parameters including NP as well as the sedimentation. This is some of the information that I think has been critical because we do have a very highly drained area up in northwest Ohio, and trying to understand DRP and TP flows through those two different routes has been very enlightening. There was a lot of discussion early on about mandating or putting a moratorium on tile installation in northwest Ohio, which would have been a great conflict in relationship to agricultural practice for that area. What we have is kind of good news here in that the actual the concentration when we talk about coming out of the tile line is actually much less than our surface flows. And that is a good story for us to be able to tell in relationship to we're actually seeing some filtering and removal of phosphorus by having water move through the soil profile and then out those tile line. The thing that doesn't look quite as good is when you start looking at the annual loading basis from the tile, and you see that you have here our individual fields, A, B, C, and so forth represented, and those pairs in that A, B, C setup. The dark area is the tile, and you see that we do have, as far as total loading, a higher total loading coming from the tile system. So we need those two parts discussed, the concentration as well as the total loading, because this picture here could give people that wrong impression of the importance of tiling in relationship to this problem. There's a couple of other things that we're doing beyond the just edge of field. We're also doing some sampling at tile outlets with some dissolved gradient thin film type of devices. This project is a two-year project, and we're working and have about 56 farmers that are participating with 80 fields being monitored right now in that particular project. And then we're also doing some things relationship to nutrient management plans and trying to get them on the ground, really looking at trying to identify those higher risk fields where some of the conservation practices need to be applied. And this is kind of summarized in a overall extension program that we have called Nutrient Stewardship for Cleaner Water that expresses some of the same goals and kind of provides our educators a opportunity to participate in this and, you know, get credit by being able to participate in the signature type of program for our application. So this is, you know, kind of the message that we're sending to folks relationship to 4R nutrient stewardship in Ohio. The whole ideal of legislation would have never happened without the cooperation of the commodity groups and Farm Bureau and others. So they were very instrumental in writing some of those initial rules that you see that were presented, both for the application criteria as well as setting up the training program. So that was, you know, very much agriculture wanting to be a part of the solution there. And then we are obviously doing a lot of research that will help validate some of those issues, and we're looking at it not only from the agronomic need, but also importantly from the water quality piece. So appreciate the opportunity to share a little bit of what's going on in Ohio today, and be happy to answer any questions if there's time. No, that is strictly for those that are on more than 50 acres of agricultural production or apply from a commercial standpoint. So it does not include lawn care operators or those types of audiences. Yeah.
Was there initially some discussion about more tillage in that watershed to take care of this? I had heard this.
Well, you know, it's the tillage ideal is still, you know, we see, and it's kind of universal from a water quality standpoint, getting nutrients below the surface, particularly the closer those nutrients have been applied to a rainfall event. And so there's a lot of discussion about getting the nutrients below the surface. That could be tillage, but it could be placement via other routes as far as implements designed to do that. And there's a number of, you know, John Deere has a number of implements that they're kind of testing in that area. They can do higher speed applications, trying to, as close as we can, mimic the surface broadcast application. But no, there's not really a discussion about tillage, but in all honesty, that region does not have much continuous no-till. It's going to be more of a rotational tillage type of program. Yeah, you know, the first line of 72% realizing that phosphorus is an issue and it is related to agriculture is kind of a key thing. The thing you have to look at with that 50%, I mean, a lot of the practices we're talking about in 4R nutrient stewardship are things that many have adopted, you know, and on a regular basis. They're making the right rate recommendations. They're doing, you know, precision placement because maybe they've moved into a precision application. So, you know, of the things that we've discussed up to this point, there may not be any real changes that they can make to their operation because they've already implemented most of those. So, you know, that number is kind of hard to interpret because you got those two kind of competing thoughts as somebody answers that question. Oh, yeah, pretty heavily, sure. Well, you know, when you start talking about these water quality issues, there's always that argument that 80% of the problem is coming from 20% of the folks. And, you know, the 20% of the folks may not be the folks that are participating in our educational programs and, you know, those kind of things that now, you know, there's some at least mandate to get them to think about what they're doing differently. And, you know, our discussion about RAID and talking about that piece in our certification program, I think has been very beneficial. There's a lot of farmers that are now going and taking, you know, they typically get their recommendation from their ag retailer. They're not really connected to their soil tests. They're starting to look at their soil tests, get connected a little bit to what those recommendations are and taking a closer look and having, I think, a better conversation with the ag retailers and those making nutrient recommendations to see if things fit their management system and their production practices. Yeah. Yeah, you know, what we've identified so far is one key thing is obviously legacy phosphorus. So where we have high testing fields, we certainly don't want to continue to add nutrient to that. So that's one key area. The second is the surface application, then having a runoff. So really those are the areas that we've kind of focused our educational program and making sure that we're approaching those because we know those are the low-hanging fruit in relationship to this issue. It's, you know, some of those other practices where you're going to need, 4Rs isn't going to get us to the reductions that we're talking about of 40% that you may have heard of for that watershed. They're only going to get us part of the way there. We're also going to have to look at higher risk fields and putting water control practices and some of those types of things into effect and filtering and so forth to manage nutrients to a greater extent. Yeah, this is a three-year type of certification for us, so we get another opportunity to visit with folks every 3 years for a couple hours and talk about new practices and new things. With this, you know, kind of initial, we want to set a foundation so kind of everybody's at that same understanding of agronomics and relationship to nutrients, and then we can start adding some of those other more advanced or more enhanced type of practices in the future.
I'm from up in that area, and I still farm up there's all this tillage going on. How much would a shift to more no-till impact the Great Lakes on this issue?
Well, it probably would be a negative impact, unfortunately, because we continue to see where no-till, and it is a dissolved reactive phosphorus problem, which is primarily in that basin. That's the only component that we see going up as far as concentration and loading. So in that situation, actually no-till is probably going to exacerbate the problem rather than be a solution to the problem under the way we've been managing it in the past. Now, if we look at not applying all the nutrients on the surface and a no-till folks start saying, I can do something more to put a piece of steel in the ground that does minimal soil disturbance to place nutrients, and not just do disturbance with planting operations. I mean, we may have to be some give and take in relationship to that. It's kind of the battle. And I don't know that we have the exact answer to it yet, but that's what some of the edge of field studies are helping lead us to a better understanding of those answers.
So thank you.
Thank you very much.